Well, I guess I can just say Gene probably hit everything, so we can call it good. But again, Gene hit all kind of the main points here. And, you know, truthfully, when I was asked to do this initially, I was asked to talk about the Chinese market. Well, the game has changed considerably since when I was asked to do this in June to what it is today. So we're going to kind of just broadly talk about the problems in China, what's going on, what we see, possible things that can happen in the future. S&Ds, and I'm sure not everyone wants to look at this and wants to talk about this. And again, I'm not 100% sure where you guys all are going to stand on, you know, as this is an ethanol conference, DDGs are kind of your byproduct, but it is a good thing to talk about. So, you know, the few things to look at that are kind of broad points that we can look at for this year are truthfully the two circles we got on there. The assumption was, and probably where we really are going to finish out this year, is we're going to export about 10.5 million tons of DDGs off the coasts. That's about 27% or so of almost 28% of what we produce. Abnormally, that's high versus normal. The Chinese have bought early. They bought hard. It increased all our prices pretty substantially, and we saw a run-up in all exports everywhere. The chart on the bottom, again, just graphically shows exports versus production. You can see linear how we move up through the years. Largest players, again, graphically, last year versus this year, currently up to date. You can kind of see what's gone on. China became 50% of the U.S. export market share. Previous last year, we were about 34%. Everyone else has kind of had to shrink down. It was very impressive last summer. We had Chinese delegation after Chinese delegation coming into our office talking about DDGs. Again, you know, you'd put your presentation together, you'd put your export grid together. Chinese company would come in and basically you'd show them, hey, we think we're going to export X amount of tons. No, we're going to take more. Really? Okay, that doesn't seem to work. So recalculate all your numbers and you'd go through. Next, Chinese delegation would come in, hey, we're going to export X amount of tons. No, we're going to take more. You know, recalculate your numbers again. And, you know, by the third or fourth time this had happened, you know, we're sitting there and I said, well, we're going to export about 11, maybe 12 million metric tons. Yeah. We'll take about half that. Ooh, okay. You know, so you're starting to kind of do the math on what's going on here and where they were buying, and you started looking at their buying pace and the conditions everyone was in, and then you started looking at the historical scheme with how everyone did everything. And you could kind of see this perfect storm of everything, how prices were going to maintain and how prices weren't going to maintain. Again, you know, how you traded it, how you didn't trade it, my impression was I was relatively conservative on the thing. You traded your exports, you were going to do, you maintained a position where you thought you were comfortable. There was just too many concerns with one person buying that much of the export grid. It was a big factor. But quickly, graphical again of what they've done. U.S. total exports, if you look at the top lines, that's total U.S. exports everywhere. The red line is Chinese style against it. And the chart on the bottom is just linear graphs up the chain. So you can kind of see just over time what the Chinese economy has done and the Chinese feeding industry has done to the entire DDG industry. You know, they've been the player. And I know, if I had my world soybean guy sitting beside me, I could pretty much make him choke in his mouth. But, you know, everyone always laughed and said, yeah, the Chinese will buy it. And as Gene liked to mention, it was a great point. You know, we can't sit here in today's environment anymore and have this because of this. And the next slide will show it more. Again, I got to thank the Grains Council because I love this chart. It's a nice, easy graphical representation of what we see going on in the market. You know, if you look back in time, you can see the yellow line on top is SIF corn. The top line on is SIF DDGs or FOB DDGs. Apologize, FOB corn against FOB DDGs. Historically, DDGs always would trade at even money to a small discount to corn at the Gulf. I mean, in the last, you know, 3 to 5 years, 6 years, DDG, or actually probably 3 years, 4 years is probably better. DDGs have traded at a premium, and last year they traded at a substantial premium. getting back to the point Gene made, you got to be able to hit some more markets in other areas of the world. The problem is most people in other areas of the world still deem DDGs need to be a discount to corn. And when you had one buyer basically saying, yeah, no, they don't, you throw the scheme off to everything. So basically, let's talk about problems now and what we've seen. You know, this is about a four-year graphical representation of SIF NOLA DDGs. So barges delivered to the Gulf, getting ready to go into exports. The purple line in here that has the two little arrows drawn to it kind of shows what's happened here. So the big breakdown in December was, Christmas Eve. There was some rumors that no more DDGs were going to go into China. There was going to be AQSIQ was going to restrict the trade. They were going to change the policies. They weren't going to allow certain traits to be imported. The market fell $100 a ton in about 2 days, 3 days, 4 days, something like that. And about a week later, the market was up $80-$90 a ton. It was pretty well the ugliest whipsaw I've ever seen in my life when I've been trading things, but a lot of people kind of took it on the chin. But again, the reason why we got there was because the industry hadn't expected the Chinese to come in the way they did. The market in the Gulf was relatively short product. Again, DDGs being a byproduct, the tube is only so big and you're only going to be able to push so much through it. So as people got short and there were end users that were just going to take it, you couldn't get yourself covered. We inflated the market up. You continued to have buying. It caught people. We made a rally back up in the early part of spring. Everything looked fine. There was more business getting put on. Other areas of the world continued to look at values and kind of couldn't get their heads wrapped around buying it. Soybean meal, again, was very expensive everywhere. We started seeing certain areas of the world basically switching to other proteins and throwing DDGs out. You saw it in the U.S. You've seen hog feeders switch to other things. Canola meal switched. DDGs were thrown out. So domestically, market share went down. Exports went up. And again, we saw that on the earlier graphs. But a few of the things you kind of look at here again, too, is, you know, the U.S. needs to clear. And Gene mentioned it. You have to clear about 25% of our crop just because the U.S. can't hack it. You know, the problem is out of the entire production, China is now 16% of our use. Well, as of the 24th of July, China is not going to be buying our DDGs in the fashion that we have to talk about today. You know, so you still get U.S. guys that are making a ton of money are going to start including as many DDGs as they can, but we got to work our way through the backlog, and we got to get that 16% of China to go somewhere. Does it go to the EU? Probably not, because you still have some of these same traits that aren't approved in the EU Union, that you have the same problems in China. So the EU, you're not going to take it. You're basically talking now North Africa, you're talking other areas in Asia, you know, and it's these guys that, if we go back to this chart, this other half that you saw last year is definitely smaller. Those guys are just all going to start taking more. And we're starting to see a lot of them come back into the market now because of prices. Other world corn Otherworldly corn is competitive against DDG prices on a landed basis to a lot of areas. So you're going to start seeing some switching, and you're going to start seeing some people being able to do some stuff. But let's talk about the big dates that probably mean things that a lot of you guys probably know. But this is China in a nutshell with what's happened in kind of the last 60 days. You know, June 6th, and it always seems like it's a Friday or it's a holiday or it's the day before a holiday, and I seem like I've been traveling every time this happens, which is always great, but it is what it is. June 6th, AQSIQ announces that basically no more import permits. You know, we saw a big crash, and you saw that on one of those graphs. You know, and basically the game was they were bringing DDGs in, they were testing them, they were showing that they were positive for MIR-162, they were put in quarantine, they were putting in some sort of non-discharging point. Mid-June, I kind of recollect it was about the 22nd, 23rd, somewhere in there. And that one kind of came in a couple days, but they started issuing permits to people that weren't found to have DDGs in quarantine. So if you were doing a good job getting your product in, and whatever a good job is, getting your product in, they were allowing more import permits. The 3rd of July, again, you looked at that next breakdown, they basically announced you got to have third-party origin testing. And if it tests clean, we'll let it in. If it doesn't test clean, you're not getting it in. There were some of there were DDGs that still were clearing. Well, July 24th, basically was announced, well, okay, now you have to have the government stamp something. Has to say it's clean of all GMO traits that are not approved in China. In kind of correspondence that U.S. Grains Council said, well, we can't register any more plants because I don't think this is really doable. I mean, you know, the federal government, and from what we can tell, really isn't set up to test for GMO traits. They aren't going to stamp anything. We saw it on the corn industry. You know, Gene kind of hit on that with what's going on with corn. It doesn't look like that's the government's job. So you're kind of putting today an environment where you're probably not going to be going into China. It's concerning. The future? It's a good question. There are a couple large vessels being loaded of DDGs that we're aware of in the Gulf. There will be more containers because there's a lot of import permits out yet. The Chinese feeder wants to feed this stuff. It's a great feed for him. He's developed a lot of his rations around it. He enjoys feeding it. And the reason he enjoys feeding it is basically due to this. Give it, there's a little bit of, let's call it a swag factor, a little scientific wild-ass guess on here, but it gets us close. So the blue lines, if you look at it on this graph, are basically domestic values of grain. And this is a landed China in Guangzhou, which is southern China down around Hong Kong. But if you look at it quickly, the first group we have there is corn prices. They're landed corn prices, and I kind of factored this forward out into the O&D time frame. You look at their feed wheat prices. Again, the red is kind of U.S. origin. The greenish color, I guess we'll call it, is basically the cheapest origin I could kind of pick in the world. You start looking at what you see in this picture. So corn, which there is a lot of corn in China, they grow a lot of it. The government has a price fix, if you can call it, and it's basically designed to support the farmers. They don't have an LDP-style payment. They don't have countercyclical payments. They don't have revenue insurance like we do in the U.S. The government basically buys the corn, and they do it to keep farmers out in the countryside so they don't have everyone move into the country. They can't, or into the city. They can't handle it. But what we have seen now is corn is expensive. So the few things you're seeing that have increased pretty substantially in China, one is Milo. If you look at the U.S. Milo S&D, we're going to export more Milo to China than we ever have ever. I mean, 3 years ago, we didn't export Milo to China at all, barely. You know, 100,000 tons. This year, we're going to export 4. Mind you, the U.S. only grow, I mean, that's 40% of the U.S. crop is going to go to China. Just it's going to go there because it's cheaper. Barley's another one. Australia is going to export more barley than they ever have to China, ever. And again, you can say a lot of it goes into their malting industry, but a lot of it's getting fed. Again, it's cheaper than corn. Soybean meal, yeah, it is what it is. Canola meal, again, pricing proteins here, so you guys just have a visual representative. And then you can look at DDGs. And again, the purple line is containers. The blue line is bulk. And the reason the purple line is so much cheaper, it's basically due to, and again, I'm going to pick on Gene because he's sitting over here and he kind of got to steal my thunder, so it's good to go. Containers. You have a lot of these upper Midwest ethanol plants that have freight that is not that expensive to get into the Chicagoland container loading yards. Container freight from Chicago is similar to vessel freight out of the Gulf to China. So if we want to look at it really quickly, you are upside down barge freight from wherever you're loading in Illinois to the Gulf in competitive nature on DDGs and bulk today. Give it as everything changes and market spreads work around, those numbers do contract and do change, but in today's environment, that's kind of where we're at. Now, to kind of broaden this a little bit, we'll talk about just China's grain issues. You know, quick math, 30, 40% stocks to use in China right now on corn stocks. It's massive. It's beyond massive. Governmental owned. The stocks are kind of in the northern growing regions and in the eastern growing regions. Again, you feed more in the central and in the southern, so there's some transportation costs. You know, it was mentioned upon what is the quality of these stocks. The Chinese government's held corn for an extended amount of time. We know quality's probably degraded. I mean, my office in China's kind of thought the same thing. I think everyone's thinking the same thing. Their quality is lower. You don't hold corn for 2 years and hope for the best. You know, the other one, too, our hedge desk, the gentleman that sits beside me runs our hedge desk, always kind of laughs, but China's had 11 record crops in a row, or at least so says their grain supporting area. If that's really true or not, I don't know. But can they have another large crop? Because if they do, we keep this extremely burdensome stocks-to-use ratio, which probably does limit the amount of grains they want to import and what they want to do and what they don't want to do. We do know there are some areas, some of the major growing areas in China right now that are experiencing below normal precipitation. We assume they probably are going to have some lower production, but you're kind of taking a little bit of a guess on this one. And lastly, how is China's government going to benefit imports? You know, the Chinese feeder wants to handle some DDGs. That's all there's to it. And if we go back and say, is there a possibility they will import under, I don't know, like a way they import corn, for example. There's a quota. X amount of tons of quota is issued to the entire system. The government controls it, and then the government can regulate how much will come in. Prior to this, they did have import permits, but as much could come in as the market would bear. We don't know. That's the problem. The government hasn't got to the point where we really know where China is and where China really isn't. Our government hasn't really decided how we're going to respond back with what they have asked from everyone on July 24th. So the industry's in a little bit of a limbo if you're talking China. But it does feel like people want to continue importing the product. It does feel like something will probably happen, and if it's 3 months, 6 months, or a year, I'm not really sure. We can kind of go back to what happened in the anti-dumping time. It was 6 months. That kind of makes sense with most of you guys, kind of when they got their curves switched out. It's probably what will happen again, and it's also going to depend on where their stocks really go and where their grains really go. I like to always go back to this slide here, and basically what we do know is, you know, if you'd put DDG prices in here and say everything's open, our export number on DDGs would be 12 million tons this year. I mean, it'd be huge, right? But we're cheap now, and, you know, it's come to a point that feeders want to feed something that's cheap. They don't want to have to buy expensive corn. My opinion, the next thing the government in China will probably do is they're going to probably put a hit on Milo. You know, sure, it's non-GMO. Sure, there's this. But if you really do have a 40% stocks-to-use ratio and you're really in the pickle that you got to try to sell something, yeah, I'd probably try to contain that too. So, I mean, I don't think the problems are done over there. I think they got to maintain their policies. It just feels like they got to work through a funk to get where they need to be with their internal economics and their internal supply and demands. But pretty short, it's pretty sweet, but if you want China in a nutshell, that's where we're at. So definitely questions and comments, I more than welcome them.